brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I think it's foolish to try and identify or tag a level to a kid. Say, oh, this kid's a Division III kid, or this kid's a Division II prospect, or, you know, so on and so on. If you don't go and watch college games, that quite frankly just doesn't make sense to me. And that's something that took me some time personally to figure out as well. But sometimes when you stop going to college games, you lose some perspective on just how good those levels are. And quite frankly, if you don't go out to college games, then you have no business trying to evaluate high school players in terms of their college potential.
TJ Petros is the sole owner of NEO Spotlight, which provides the most complete coverage for high school basketball in Ohio and surrounding areas, covering both the top caliber players as well as under-the-radar recruits. NEO Spotlight also includes team rankings, prospect databases, and event recaps, while working dually as a scouting service for college institutions across all levels in Ohio and throughout the country. After graduating from the University of Mount Union in 2014, where he majored in English and AYA education, TJ combined his passion for high school basketball and writing to become the lead beat writer for Third Coast Hoops prior to launching NEO Spotlight. When he isn't in the gym, TJ is a teacher here in Northeast Ohio.
Hey Hoopheads, this April our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering a huge $3,000 discount with a trade-in of any model in any condition. And they'll knock off $3,000 when you trade in one of their competitors' machines too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Chris Sullivan, head men's basketball coach at Denison University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Grab your favorite journal and take some notes as you listen to this episode with TJ Petros from NEO Spotlight. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel, who is on his way to Disneyland with his four kids under the age of eight. So kudos to Jason as he's on the road to Florida. I know he's going to have a good vacation, but man, I give the guy a lot of credit. Anyway, we are here tonight with TJ Petros from NEO Spotlight here in the state of Ohio. TJ, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thanks for having me, Mike. And just kind of go off of what you just said, I don't know if it's much of a vacation.
That's what I'm saying.
If you got to take four kids. Yeah, like you said, kudos to him, man. Much respect. That sounds like a challenge, but hopefully they all enjoy themselves.
Yeah, they'll have fun. But man, the idea of standing in line with four kids under the age of eight at some of the attractions at Disneyland. I went there with my kids. So I have three now, and I went before my youngest was born, and kids had fun. But man, I just remember standing in line for like hours at a time trying to entertain like the 3 and 4 year old. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure this is where I want to go on vacation. So I haven't been back since. So I guess I'm not getting any Disneyland sponsorships, but that's okay.
Yeah, those fast passes come in handy.
They do. That is for sure. So, TJ, before we get started, I want to just give you a chance to share with people. Just tell them a little bit about what you do, because somebody who's listening may not be aware of NEO Spotlight and kind of what you're all about. So just talk a little bit about what you do, why you do it, and then we'll sort of jump back and go through your story.
I think a lot of people, especially here in Northeast Ohio, have probably seen me on Twitter at some point. And I think a lot of people don't realize that what I do goes far, far beyond social media. So I primarily run what's called an NCAA scouting service. Long story short, college coaches pay me a yearly subscription fee for scouting reports, evaluations, contact information on prospects. They pay me so that they can text and call me at any hour throughout the night and they don't have to feel bad about it. So a lot of the work that I do is behind the scenes. I typically go and see about 120 high school games per season. I initially started off covering just Northeast Ohio, hence the name NEO Spotlight. But back in 2019 is when I fully branched out to cover the entire state. So that keeps me busy. One thing I try to do with that is a little strategy that I guess I've developed over the years is during the week, I try to stick to Northeast Ohio, and then I use the weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, to get out on the road, go to as many of these different showcase events as I can. So that takes up a vast majority of my time. During the off season, I also run a consulting service where I travel to high school teams, AAU teams, and just educate them on the ever-changing recruiting process, you know, how COVID has affected the landscape with the transfer portal and the NCAA granting student athletes an extra year back in 2020. So yeah, it keeps me busy. And unlike a lot of high school reporters and people who cover basketball here in Ohio, they go from November to March. You know, I get a few weeks off and then I'm right back at it with AAU. So. It's a grind. It's a lot of miles on the road. It's a lot of fast food. It's a lot of Wendy's and, you know, Taco Bell, unfortunately, and, Chipotle and, you know, whatever else I can get my hands on. But, it's a beautiful thing. I love basketball, but I've always loved people more. And I think what I do just gives me an opportunity just to cross paths with so many different people from so many different backgrounds and ethnicities and cities and states and upbringings. It's awesome. And deep down, I guess I'm just a big fan. That's why I do what I do. I'm a fan of basketball. I'm no different than anybody who's listening to this podcast. I just, you know, put in my dues and, you know, learn and took the back seat for a while. And then I was fortunately able to build some credibility and rapport with both high school coaches and college coaches here in Ohio.
All right. So let's go backwards in time. How do you get started? What's the process like? Where's the idea come from? Just tell me how you got into this side of the basketball business.
Oh, so man, basketball, like I said, I've always been like somewhat obsessed with it, man. I remember when I was a little kid, I was probably 9, 10 years old, and we had just got Time Warner Cable. We just got this new cable box at my grandpa's house, man. So I'm like, oh crap. You know, I'm just flipping through all the channels. And then I remember I came across an NBA TV channel. And I just remember my world stopped for about 3 hours. I said, wait a second. There is a channel where it's basketball 24/7. And I just remember just sitting in front of the TV for like the first 3 days I had cable. And I told myself from an early age that I just didn't think that I would be happy if I wasn't doing something involving basketball. So that led me to, you know, playing. You know, I played in high school, played in AAU. I had a cup of coffee in college. But, you know, due to student teaching and things like that, it kind of took away from that experience a little bit. So when I was older, I just graduated from college. I'm playing in a local pro-am league over at Walsh. So it's like you get a lot of really good high school players, college players, overseas guys. We even had a couple NBA players stop by and play. So I see this guy who's kind of just filming all the games. So I go and introduce myself to him. Come to find out, he's a local guy named Steve Newton. He does a lot of videos and mixtapes on high school and college kids throughout Northeast Ohio. So I just, out of nowhere, I have no relationship, no rapport with this guy. I just said, hey, I was like, man, I'm an English major. I just graduated from college. If you ever need somebody to do any writing for the website, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, do that. And sure enough, that's kind of how I got my foot in the door. He allowed me to be the Third Coast beat writer. And yeah, between me and him, I mean, we saw probably well over 200 games my first year. And I think it got to the point where college coaches and high school coaches kept seeing me in the gym. They kept seeing my tweets about all the scores. And they're like, who is this guy? And, you know, thankfully, I was able to go from Third Coast Hoops to NEO Spotlight. But I always give Steve Newton his flowers, because if it wasn't for him, you know, opening the door and just allowing me to do this, I probably wouldn't be running NEO Spotlight right now.
All right. So I got two questions. One, you're a teacher. You went to school to be a teacher. A lot of times people who have a love for basketball, if you go into teaching, they go into that with the idea that I'm going to teach and I'm going to coach. Was that ever something that you thought about?
Absolutely. As bad as it's going to sound at first, that was actually my main reason for going into teaching, was because I wanted to be a high school coach. And, you know, once I started teaching and I saw how some of these parents are, I was like, yeah, maybe coaching's not the thing. You know, I give, you know, these high school coaches and college coaches the utmost respect, man. I don't think people have any idea, you know, what they do. And it goes far beyond basketball. But yeah, I definitely did have the initial goal was to coach high school and teach. And it just kind of organically happened that I started a scouting service. And some of that was as a result of a guy named Chaz Wolf, who I want to give a quick shout out to. He also runs a scouting service here in Ohio. But when I was in college at Mount Union, he came and spoke to our team, and he just kind of explained his job and what it is that he did. I had no idea that even existed. I thought in order to be a scout, you had to be a college coach. I had no idea that you could almost be like this independent contractor, where you can just kind of go out and do your own thing and work for as many colleges as you could. And he kind of introduced me to that possibility. So
how long into it was it before you abandoned the idea that at some point you might want to coach? Was it something that as soon as you got into it, you started writing for Third Coast Hoops, that you were like, hey, this is something that I really love and I want to really try to pursue this? Or was it still like, hey, this is kind of a sidelight and maybe I'll get into coaching at some point in the future?
So like right when I graduated, I was trying to, you know, I was in the process of trying to find a teaching job when I met Steve. So I actually started working with Third Coast Hoops before I even got my first teaching gig. So it just kind of naturally happened that, you know, I didn't take the coaching route, and it didn't take me very long to, you know, once I started working with Third Coast Hoops and eventually started NEO Spotlight, that I just realized that, you know, coaching wasn't really my path.
When you start your own thing, what was the process like from, forget about, we'll talk about the scouting and how you got to develop your eye as a scout, the things that you look for in a second, but just from a business standpoint, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try to make it into a viable business that I can run. On the business side of it, what were some of the challenges just in getting it up and running after working for somebody else?
Oh, it's a tough gig, because the scouting aspect of high school basketball, it's not so much what you know and how well you can evaluate talent. I mean, obviously that's a key component of it, but it's more so a relationship business, and I feel like you could probably relate to that as well. These coaches don't necessarily pay you for your information; they pay you for the connection, they pay you for the relationship, they pay you for the phone calls and the text messages. So the quicker you build your network, right, of coaches that you speak with, it's the quickest way you're going to build your subscribers and your pool of coaches that you work with. So it's a slow grind. I think a lot of people think that there's a lot of money to be made in high school basketball, but quite frankly, there's not. With the exception of, you know, the college coaches, if you take those guys out of the picture, it is a very, very, very short list of people who make a full-time living doing anything involving high school basketball. We're all working other jobs, you know, whether you're teaching or I know a guy, John Stovall, who a lot of people know, he was doing pharmaceutical sales while he was coming up. So, like, there's not a ton of money to be made. So I think people who come into this with the idea that they're just going to be making a boatload of cash, I think you just come into it with the the wrong mindset. Like, you're going to lose money before you make money. And it takes a long time to get to the point where you're bringing in, you know, a decent amount of, you know, money to where you can, you know, potentially make a living or, you know, have a great, you know, supplementary income.
What was the process for you building those relationships on both ends of it? So not only with the high school coaches, but also with the college coaches, how'd you go about doing that early on?
So this is a funny thing, man. So, when I was working with Steve, you know, I did that for about 3 or 4 years. And I had some relationships with a lot of coaches up in the Cleveland area, because that's primarily where me and Steve would go to cover games. So when I started NEO Spotlight, I said, man, I want to cover all of Northeast Ohio. I want to do, you know, Youngstown and Warren and Akron and Canton, where I'm from. And, you know, even some areas below that, like the New Phillies of the world, and, you know, go all the way out to Lorraine and Ashtabula. So what I did when I was working with Steve, I was able to make a list of all the potential college prospects in Northeast Ohio. And I had them all sorted by what high school they went to. And I'll never forget this. So I typed up this letter, you know, I had my logo on it, introduced myself, just kind of what my goal was going to be with NEO Spotlight. And, you know, within that letter, I had the name of the, you know, the player. So what I would do is I would take the name of that player out and type a new one in, change the name, you know, Dear Coach Blank, you know, and I would put that coach's name for that kid. And I mailed about 125 letters when I first started. And that's kind of how I built a lot of relationships initially.
What kind of response did you get from those letters?
Oh, it was great, actually. Somebody told me a long time ago, like, just never forget, like, the value of, like, a handwritten or a typed out personalized letter. I think it goes a long way, sometimes even more important than a phone call when you're trying to build that initial relationship. So when I sent those out, I got a ton of phone calls, text messages back, emails back. Some people even sent letters back, which I thought was cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that was I'm glad I did it that way. It was something different, something I wanted to just kind of use to set myself apart from, you know, anybody else. And yeah, and those, I still have really good relationships with coaches that I met through the letters.
Clearly that makes you stand out, because there aren't many people sending snail mail letters anymore. And typically people are getting email or getting a text, and those are obviously easy to ignore. So to be able to get those handwritten letters out to high school coaches and start to build that relationship that way was a really good strategy. What about on the college side?
Oh, on the college side, it kind of happens a bit organically. You know, some of it is, you know, word of mouth. I that's one thing I don't think the casual basketball fan truly realizes is how connected the coaching world is, whether it's Division I, Division II, Division III, junior college. All these guys talk, all these guys know each other. So if you, I feel like if you're doing a good enough job, right, word gets around sometimes. Or if a college coach sees you tweet about a kid that they're potentially interested in or recruiting, they'll send you a DM. Hey, TJ, I'm coach blah, blah, blah from, you know, insert school name here. What were your thoughts on this kid? Right. And that's usually how some relationships start. Hey, TJ, I'm coach Williams here. I got your number from coach da, 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 da. You know, I wanted to touch base with you. We wanted to start recruiting Ohio more. So it's like once you start to really build that credibility, and for me, I was able to do that just solely by going to games. And my goal has always been to, I want to see the kids more than anybody else. When a coach gets a job in Ohio, my goal was always to be like, hey, TJ is the, you know, one of the first guys that you should contact.
What's the process like for you in terms of evaluating players, and how long did it take you to feel like you were able to develop a feel for what kid was right for what level of college basketball? Because obviously part of what you do and what makes you valuable to college coaches is that you can correctly identify which kids are going to be a good fit at which level of college basketball, and maybe even further, which institution. So just talk a little bit about how you develop your eye, for lack of a better way of saying it.
So the first thing, if there's anybody who's listening, whether you're high school, college, and you're kind of interested in potentially getting into the scouting world, whether it's working your way up through the coaching ranks or potentially even, you know, trying, you know, doing what I do. What I tried early on was to listen way more than I spoke. When you first get into anything, you have no idea what you're doing. And looking back, I can honestly say that some of my early evaluations back in, you know, 2015, 2016, 2017, I was off a lot, just quite frankly, because I was so excited. I was almost too eager that I just jumped out the window. And I think sometimes you have to be willing to learn and learn slowly. So I spoke to guys like John Stovall, who's been around for 30 years. I spoke to guys like Chaz Wolf, who's been scouting back in, you know, since 2006, 2007. Spoke to Corey Albertson, who was covering Cincinnati and, you know, was doing a large part of Ohio. I spoke to these guys and I was like a tag along. You know, I would follow them from court to court. I would listen to their conversations, listen to some of the jargon, some of the terminology they use. And as a scout, over time, you naturally start to develop your own, I guess, kind of lens, you know, your own observational bias. We all have our own things that we look for. You know, what I value in a point guard might be different than what the next guy values in a point guard. But I think that's what makes, you know, basketball beautiful. It's so subjective. And it's awesome from that standpoint. But the one of the biggest pieces of advice that I could give to a young high school coach, a young scout, anybody who's listening is go to college basketball games. I think it's foolish to try and identify or tag a level to a kid, say, oh, this kid's a Division III kid or this kid's a Division II prospect or, you know, so on and so on. If you don't go and watch college games. That, quite frankly, just doesn't make sense to me. And that's something that took me some time personally to figure out as well. I had some experience at the Division III level, but sometimes when you stop going to college games, you lose some perspective on just how good those levels are. I tell people to go watch a John Carroll, a Mount Union, a Marietta, a Baldwin Wallace, a Worcester, you know, Walsh, the Ashlands, the Finleys, the West Libs. I mean, the list just go on and on. Ohio has some of the best small college basketball in the country. And quite frankly, if you don't go out to college games, then you have no business trying to evaluate high school players in terms of their college potential.
It's so funny to hear you say that because I remember early on with the podcast, I met John Baines, who coaches at Elmhurst. I met him down at the Jay Billis camp. And then shortly after that, I had John come on. And one of the things that he talked about was the number of kids that he's recruiting and he's talking to them. And there's clearly out there a bias for kids that, man, I don't necessarily want to talk to Division III schools for the same reason that you just talked about, that people a lot of times are unrealistic about the level that they can play at, both the player themselves and oftentimes their family. But John just talked about how there was a ton of kids that he'd sit down within his office and say, have you ever been to a Division III college basketball game? And I mean, these are kids who are attempting to be recruited and play college basketball. And he's like, he was always amazed by the number of kids who had never even seen a Division III game and yet kind of wanted to blow off coaches from that level because they thought it was beneath them. And to your point, if you go and you watch a game at the Division III level and you see how good those players are, I think the average high school player, the average certainly parent of a high school player, has no concept whatsoever of how good you have to be to play college basketball at any level.
I would agree 100%. I think one of the most important aspects of that is, you know, not only going to watch the games, but then you have to be realistic and honest with yourself. And sometimes what you find out isn't exactly what you were looking for. You know, a lot of these kids, you know, think that they're Division I kids or Division II kids when, quite frankly, they might not even be Division III kids. So I think a lot of, you know, a reason why some of these kids and coaches don't go to games is because then you have to face reality. You know, hey, I'm not going to go watch a Division III game because if I go there and realize, hey, maybe I'm not good enough to play here, then that ruins this, you know, facade that I have in my head that, you know, that I'm a Division II or if I'm a Division I player.
when you go out and you're watching kids, how do you go about taking notes or getting the observations from your eye onto paper so that when you go back and you do a write-up or you put together a scouting report or you're having something that you're going to share with a college coach, do you have a strict form that you use? Just what's your process when you're actually sitting down watching a kid and putting something down on paper?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say that I have, a set strategy to when I go watch a game or a tournament or anything like that. So what I do, I just trust my eyes. I think as a scout, I think sometimes we get caught up in the outside noise. We get caught up in, you know, the tweets and some of the videos and the highlights. But man, sometimes you just have to trust your own judgment and trust what you see. If I don't see it, then I can't say that I did. If I see a kid play three times and he doesn't play well, but, you know, everyone else is telling me, hey, this kid is that, until I see it, I can't just solely go off of that. But I guess the one thing that I look for primarily is just guys that compete. I think nowadays it is so, so hard just to find kids that value each and every possession, kids that talk. My God, these kids don't shut up when they're not playing basketball. You have them in the classroom, right? They're the class clowns in the hallways. They're joking and laughing, and you know they're singing music on their AirPods. But then when they get on the court, they're you don't hear anything. So I always I really value kids who compete, guys who talk, guys who make other people better, guys who take pride in just playing because. If you don't play hard, there's three thoughts that come to my mind. One, you're out of shape, right? If you're not playing hard, maybe he's just not in shape. Two, if you're not playing hard, maybe you just don't love basketball the way you say that you do. Because if you love it, you compete, right? I don't think there's anything in your life that if you truly love it, that you give a half-ass effort to it. Right? Or, you know, sometimes you see guys that play hard, you know, when they're making shots. But when those shots aren't going in, they let it affect everything else. Then that, you know, to me, that kind of speaks volumes about their character. Okay, maybe this guy is selfish. You know, he's a good teammate when things are going his way. But when things aren't going his way, then it's a different story. I like guys that just understand how to play. Guys that have a natural feel and understanding. Guys that can pass the ball. God, I feel like passing is just such a lost art in today's game. When I see a guy that can, you know, make a bounce pass or, you know, a correct post entry pass or make a secondary read, it's like, dude, you'd be shocked at just how often that doesn't happen. And it's unbelievable because all we see on social media are these kids with their trainers, right? But then it's just, I feel like we lack some of just the basic fundamental skills. So. I think basketball, more times than not, is a very simple game. We just make it a lot more difficult than it has to be.
Yeah. You hit on a couple of things that have been recurring themes that we've talked about a lot on the podcast. So one is a feel for the game and the IQ versus the going out and training with a trainer one-on-one, where I think the kids today, if you look at the skill level. I'm talking about empty gym, ability to shoot the ball, ability to handle the ball, ability to do things that 15 or 20 years ago, player 11 or 12.
The skill is off the charts these days.
Yep. That's what I'm saying. Like 11, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, like kids, the skill level is unbelievable, but the ability to apply that skill, I think is still an area that Yeah, there is. There's no doubt about that. And I think that's one of the things when I watch basketball, you know, you hit on a lot of things that when I'm watching, I try to look for those things that you just talked about where you sit down in a gym and you can watch a game and the average person's probably looking and going, oh, this kid made four threes or this kid did this or that. But really what you're looking for is, does the kid have an IQ? Do they share the ball? Do they play hard? Do they know how to play in a team structure? Do they make their teammates better? And a lot of times you can just sit down and if you know what you're looking for, you'd be like, well, that kid didn't really do a whole lot, but that kid's the best player on the floor because you can see some of the things that they do away from the ball, or they do things that are intuitive that helps their team win that the average person isn't looking for. And I think what's interesting is when you start trying to project kids, right, to the next level, you're talking about that kid's going to have to be able to play on a team within a role in a structure. There's very few kids who are going to be good enough that they're going to get to the next level. I don't care whether it's Division One, Two, Three, NAI, whatever, JUCO. There's very few kids that are going to be like, okay, their college coach is just going to hand them the ball and say, hey, man, go to work. Like, you're going to have to fit into a role. So just talk a little bit about that, how you evaluate in terms of, okay, this kid has this particular skill and I can see where they fit on a college roster.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. 99% of the kids that are playing high school basketball are going to be role players. You know, the kids that are college players. I think some of the disconnect that happens is these kids don't really get a break. You know, I've been seeing conversations on social media recently where there is no off season for these kids.
Nope.
You got to think the state tournament in Ohio is over on March 19th. The first AAU tournament this year was April 1st and 2nd. That's not even 2 weeks. That's not even a full 2 weeks before these kids are back under the whistle again, you know, playing in structured games. I'm sure your upbringing was the same. And God, I'm going to, you know, sound like such an old, you know, old get off my lawn kind of guy. But like, I remember growing up and when I was in high school, we would go down to a place in Canton called the Hall of Fame Fitness Center. If you went down there Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 5 o'clock, you would get about 18 to 20, 35 to 50 year old dudes who were all coming over after work or, you know, on their lunch breaks or, you know, whatever it was. And these guys competed. This is what they did. Yep. This is what they did to give themselves a break from home, you know, to get away from their wives and kids for a little bit, right? So these Tuesday, Thursday, Friday pickup games, they meant a lot to them. And they were going to be damned if a 17-year-old, 16-year-old TJ Petros came in there and was shooting all the damn shots and letting his guys score. So when you're playing with older guys, you quickly have to identify what your role is. Otherwise, you're not going to get picked up again. So I just remember telling myself, hey, I'm going to try and rebound it. I'm going to make sure my guy doesn't score, and I'm going to make open shots. And when you develop some of these guys' trust, then they start to give you a little more freedom. They allow you to get maybe one or two more shots than you were a couple months ago. I just feel like these kids don't really get that. They don't get the opportunity to go figure it out for themselves. We're constantly organizing things for them. We're constantly doing things for them, right? And I'm guilty of this too. So I'm not, I'm at fault as well. But like between the showcases and the AAU practices and AAU tournaments and high school open gyms, high school games, like my God, they never stop.
There's no doubt. I mean, this is a rant that I've gone on, I don't even know how many times on the podcast when it comes to development as a player. And just as you said,
we can't fault them for not developing if we don't give them time to go develop.
Right. I mean, the system is what it is. Like, the system is never going back to like it was when I was growing up in graduating from high school in 1988. You know, I was playing at the local park. And I was driving around the city of Cleveland trying to find games. And I was going down and trying to play at Cleveland State with their players and doing all these different things and playing with guys all different ages, all different races, all different places, you know, throughout the city. And I feel like that's what made me better. And now, even if a kid wanted to do what I did, it just doesn't exist. Like, you can't find a good high-level pickup game with high school, college, and adult players. Like, good luck trying to find where those games exist. And so conversely, kids are put into the system where they're 7, 8, 9 years old, and now they're always playing with kids their own age. They're always playing with an official. They're always playing with a coach. They're always playing with mom or dad in the stands. And I think that's where some of the basketball IQ and creativity of players sometimes get taken away, because you're never just out on the playground just playing where nobody's really watching you, and you can kind of try to do some different stuff. Or conversely, like you said, you're playing in a high leverage situation with older guys who don't want to lose and have to sit out, and then they're just going to go home. They want to keep playing. And so you just don't ever learn to play that role. I just think there's so much that we lose with kids not playing pickup basketball. And yeah, I mean, you look at the way the basketball season runs, and basically the only time you potentially as a good high school player, the only time potentially you could take off or have off is August, when you have here in Ohio, you have the no contact period for high schools and AAU is basically shut down. That's really your only month where there really isn't anything particular that you can do. And of course, those kids are still training and doing all kinds of things during that time anyway. But yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough.
Yeah, it genuinely is, because, you know, right September, they're right back to open gyms and, you know, workouts with their high school team. So, but yeah, it's like you kind of hit on earlier, like I look for, you know, kids, how do you impact the game without scoring the basketball? That's something, you know, if there's any high school kids listening to this episode, think about that. Like, what do you, if you're not scoring the ball, what the hell are you doing? And a lot of these kids can't tell you. You know, there's a kid, I'll give you an example, a kid named De'Eric Barber. He's a
Richmond Heights kid.
Yeah, starting point guard at Richmond Heights, sophomore. I mean, he averaged, I think, maybe somewhere probably between 10, 13 points a game. Not a ton, right, compared to, you know, some other guys in the area. But, there were so many times throughout the season where he was the best guy on the floor. He might have had 6 points at the time. I mean, a kid who just understands his role. He guards his tail off on the defensive end. He sets the table for everybody else. It's like guys enjoy playing with De'Eric Barber. Like, and as a point guard, like, do your teammates enjoy playing with you? Like, that's something I like kids to ask themselves. Like, do your teammates enjoy you?
It's so true. I can give you, I mean, so my son's AAU team, we're fortunate enough that we have the two guards from Lutheran West, Jason Levis and Derek Fairley. And those two kids both are super unselfish, and then it sort of becomes contagious. And I mean, the team that we play on, the ball just moves. Nobody cares who scores, and they just play super hard. And you watch, and as a father, I'll sit on the sideline, and there's lots of times where I'm watching the game, I'm like, I don't even care if my son's in the game, because it's just so much fun to watch. Because all the things that you described about, are you competitive? Do you share the ball? What do you do when you're not scoring? These are things that all these kids on this team just do. And it just makes it so much fun to watch. And it's, again, when you start to project, okay, who can play at the next level and what can they do? You got to be able to do more than just score, because chances are at the college level, like I said earlier, the coach isn't just being like, hey man, here's the ball, go do your thing.
Yeah, the guys that have that freedom are very, very few and far between.
Yep.
And that's what, you know, a lot of kids don't realize too. And, you know, we're probably won't have time to get you know, too far deep into, you know, just like the current recruiting landscape. But what people don't realize, and if they do, I don't think they understand just the severity of it, is the value of high school basketball players is the lowest that it has ever been in the history of the world. Like, this is the most difficult time to be a student athlete in high school if you're interested in playing college basketball.
Just explain that for people, so maybe somebody who doesn't have an understanding of just how the extra COVID year and just the transfer portal, and just go through all the steps of what's made that true.
Oh man. So I'll give you just one example. I think five years ago, or maybe not even that long ago, about 4 years ago, I was looking at the total amount of kids that went Division II, in a certain graduating class. I think it was about 34 to 35 kids, that had received either full scholarships, partial scholarship, half scholarship, whatever it was at the Division II level. Right now we have 18 kids. We have 18 kids in the 2023 class that are committed to Division II schools. And mind you, that number is going to go up a little bit in the next few weeks as kids starting to realize, hey, this is all I got. But that number has been almost cut in half. The college coaches just are not recruiting high school kids the way that they used to. And like, I'll give you another example. So the month of April, there are two live periods that take place. One is the 21st through the 23rd. The other is the 28th through the 30th. 5 years ago, there wasn't, there were very, 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 very few Division I coaches who were not out on the road during a live period. you know, schools would send all five of their eligible coaches out on the road to different tournaments, different showcases to evaluate high school kids, junior college kids. This year, I've talked to a ton of Division II and Division I coaches who aren't going out to watch high school kids in the spring because they're hosting transfers on visits. Oh, you know, that weekend, you know, we have our top transfer coming in on a visit. We want to make sure the whole staff is here. So, you know, so this kid can know that he's a priority to us. So we can't go out to, you know, watch an AAU tournament. We'll have this kid on campus all weekend. It's just completely changed. Coaches need guys that can play right away. And just to be completely honest, there are not a lot of high school kids who are able to contribute and play right away at the collegiate level. It's not. I think one thing that really gets overlooked at the high school level, we always want to talk about how good a kid is and how talented he is and how well he scores it or dribbles or passes it, whatever. I think one thing that gets really overlooked is how well coached that kid is at the high school level. Because physically, you're going to come in behind the curve already. These guys are older than you, stronger than you, more mature than you. But you can't be physically and mentally behind the curve. So I like kids who come from winning programs, come from winning cultures, come from coaches that have discipline, have structure, that play within the system. Those are the type of kids that typically do well at the college level and do well early versus kids who might be more talented but don't come from a organized or as structured high school program.
When you look at evaluating a kid, how do you balance what you see? I like to ask this of college coaches too. How do you evaluate or how do you balance the evaluation between what you see when you're watching them play in high school versus when you go out and you watch a kid play in an AAU setting? Are you looking for different things in each of those settings? Do you value one setting more over the other? Just talk about your philosophy there.
Oh, that's a great question. And it's something I really like, about basketball. My goal is to always see the kids in as many settings as possible. Whether that is an open gym, a showcase, a high school game, an AAU game. So I want to see the kids as often as I can because you're right. You do pick up on different things. When you see a kid with his AAU team, right, you're probably going to see what his natural role is when he's surrounded by other really talented players. He's not going to be able to take 10, 15, 20 shots. He's going to have to figure out how does he impact winning without the basketball, right? So you get to see, okay, what is this kid's natural role when he's surrounded by other legitimate prospects, right? That's what I look for when I evaluate at the AAU level, on the AAU circuits. In the high school game, it's much different, right? Because a lot of times kids are going against, inferior competition, right? When you're in an AAU game and there's 10 guys on the floor, if you're at a high level AAU game, all 10 of those guys are college prospects at some level, whether they're Division III kids, NAI, D2, D1, whatever it is. If you're at a Adidas tournament or you're at a Nike tournament, Under Armour tournament, almost every kid on the floor is going to play college basketball at some level. That is not the case when you're watching a high school game. When I go to a high school game, I might only be watching 3, 4 kids, 5 kids total. So you get a much deeper evaluation. You get to see how coachable they are. Can they play within structure? Do they let, I guess, like the environment or the importance of the game, right? Do they let that get to them? Like, if it's a big game, what do they do? Do they rise to the occasion? Can they lead? Can they talk? Do they hold guys accountable? So I guess at the high school level, I get to focus more on some of the intangible stuff, some of the character building stuff. Whereas AAU, you get to see a more just natural, okay, what is this guy? What is he more than likely going to do at the college level?
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio.
Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
When you talk to college coaches, what are some of the things that they look for, some of the things that they're asking you for? And then do each of the coaches have, when it comes to like the intangible piece of it, because obviously there's a requisite skill level and athleticism that you have to be able to have to play at the different levels. But when you talk to coaches, what are some of the things that they're asking you about that they're looking for from you in terms of your opinion?
So most of the time when a college coach calls me about a particular kid, right? They say, hey, TJ, have you seen this kid? And I'll say, yeah, I've seen him a few times, or, hey, I've seen him a lot. And they say, okay, what level is he? When they ask what level is the kid, is he a mid-major? Is he a high major? Is he low? Division two, division three, so on and so on. Once they say, okay, he's good enough for us. What are his grades like, right? Who do I need to talk to? Who's his handler? Who's in charge? What are his parents like? It's almost like college coaches are looking for a reason to not recruit you.
Right.
Especially nowadays, because like I mentioned briefly, like they're so concerned with transfers at the moment that if you give them even the slightest reason to not recruit you, then they won't. There are 2,000 players in the transfer portal right now. So they just want to make sure, hey, like, is this guy going to be bought in? Is he a guy that we got to worry about mom and dad? Do we got to worry about him up and, transferring if he doesn't play his first year? Right. So they usually call and they ask more about the character stuff, especially as of late. I get more calls about, hey, what's his school like? What are the academics like at the school? What's the dynamic of the school? Who's his mom? Who's his dad? Does he have any older brothers or sisters? What did they do? Those are the kind of questions that I've been getting more recently. And I think that is a direct result of the transfer portal. I think coaches are starting to do an even more of a deep dive in terms of your character, just because they're trying to recruit guys that are going to come and guys that are going to stay.
Now, is that something that you did right from the start in terms of trying to evaluate a kid's character? Is that something that you find yourself doing more because coaches are asking you more about it? And then how do you go about trying to discern that so you can speak intelligently about a kid that a college coach is asking you about? Because obviously when it comes to academics and the kid's attitude and coachability, those are things that you can get some idea of that from watching, but I'm assuming that you have to go and maybe talk to some people around that kid in order to get a feel for their family, their academics, their coachability, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, you definitely do. You can't just talk to the high school coaches because as much as I love those guys, they're going to say what's in the best interest of their player more times than not. They're right. Going to say, oh, he's the first one in the gym. He's the last one to leave. He's the hardest worker on the team. He's the hardest worker I've had in my 10 years at the school. And, you don't always get the full picture, I would say, from the average high school coach. But what you do is you talk to the AAU coaches, you talk to the coaches in his league, right? You talk to the coaches that he plays, that the kid plays against throughout the season. You talk to, just other basketball guys. And I don't think people realize like how quick word gets around. Like if you're a crazy parent or if you're a helicopter parent, that reputation is out and it sticks with you. There's so many parents who have hurt their kids' recruitment from early on because they came into it when the kid was a freshman. Oh, the parent is a nut. The parent's crazy.
Right.
And that reputation, that reputation, whether it's true or not, sticks with that kid from the time he's a freshman to the time he graduates. So I like to tell people, like with what I do, I think of it almost like it is an iceberg. And what I mean by that, like if you're on a boat and they say if you go past an iceberg in the water, right, you see maybe about 10, 15% of it. The other 85 to 90% of it is underwater. You know, what you see above water is the basketball, right? Is what you see on the floor, how well he shoots it, you know, how well he rebounds, how hard he plays. That's all the stuff that you can see. All the stuff underwater is the stuff that you got to do the real digging for. That's you got to make the phone calls and the text messages. And sometimes I will genuinely watch a parent when I'm at a game. It doesn't take long to figure out whose parent is who. All it takes is their kid to go into the lane and not get a foul call, right? Go their way. And you just look in the stands and whoever's the loudest, right? That you more times than not.
Absolutely.
You know, so sometimes I'll watch the kids' parents and see how they interact. And, you know, maybe I'll just go up and have a conversation with them, or, you know, I'll have a quick conversation with the kid. And I try to touch as many different bases and have as many conversations as I can, just because, like, these college coaches want the full picture. And it's right now, it's so much more than just what you can do or can't do on the basketball court.
All right. Give me advice for the parent of a high school basketball player. Give me some of your top do's and don'ts.
Oh, shut the hell up would be that would be my first do. Enjoy it. I would say if you are a parent of a high school basketball player, especially a young kid right now, just simply enjoy watching your kid play. So many parents right now, and I think this is because of social media and everything, they're caught up in the rankings and the articles and the tweets and the offers and the recruitment. I think a lot of times we make this a business for these kids at such an early age that we forget that the main goal, the main priority is to have fun.
Yep.
It's to just enjoy it. Laugh with your kid. If they miss a layup, laugh with them after the game. You know what I mean? Like, parents put such an importance on, like, how well you play or how well you didn't play, or how many offers you have or how many offers you don't have. Or it's like, my God, man, can we just, like, take a step back from this and just get back to enjoying high school basketball? I think the basketball game itself is still pretty pure, but everything outside of it, like the overall culture of high school basketball is, it's going down the toilet, man, and it's like swirling quick.
I think the biggest problem, TJ, is that everybody, just sort of because of the way the system has evolved, and I think social media has a lot to do with it, but I think it's also just the way that you have kids who are in AAU or travel basketball when they're in fifth or sixth grade. And so then they're already looking at, well, what am I going to do in middle school? And then you get to middle school and you're already thinking about, well, what high school is recruiting me, or where am I going to go to high school? Or am I going to be a varsity player when I'm a freshman or a sophomore? And then by the time you get to be the varsity level, now people are thinking about, well, where am I going to go for college? Where am I being recruited? Why is this kid who I play against all the time that I think I'm better than? Why does he have offers and I don't? And then the parents get caught up in all that. And I think, to your point, all of us forget that you have to enjoy what you're doing in the moment. Like, you only get to play high school basketball one time. And I think so often we're always focused on what's next that we sometimes forget what's right in front of us, and we forget to enjoy it, like you just said. Like, you have to be able to sit in the stands and watch your kid and be able to just have fun doing that, whether that's watching them in high school, whether that's watching them in AAU. And I mean, you can go to, obviously you've been in millions of gyms and so have I, and you sit and you watch, and it's just the behavior of parents
it's as worse right now as it has ever been. Ever.
Yeah. I mean, towards officials, and then towards coaches. And then also, I think just in general, just the way that you see people behave, that we were at an AAU tournament this weekend, and there was a parent that two kids were playing. This wasn't a game that we were playing in, but parents yelling to the kid, you know, these guys can't guard you. And the guy's up, like, rolling up and down the sidelines and screaming at the other team and at his own kid. And you're just like, man, if anybody's, you know, and obviously there was any coaches there, it's not a live period, but, you know, you're just like, this guy, I mean, come on. Like, what are you doing to your kid? Like, your kid is not enjoying that. You're not doing anything to make their experience better. Let's put it that way.
No, not at all. And I think a lot of times the parents who do things like that, they live off of the attention. I guess it makes them feel important, for whatever reason. And ultimately it's just very selfish that you're, like you said, there's not a kid on earth that enjoys their parent screaming and belting at the top of their lungs from the stands or running up and down the sidelines. There's not a single kid that enjoys that. It's honestly embarrassing to them, and it's more embarrassing to you if you're participating in that. It's absolutely nuts. It genuinely is. Like it's tough to watch. I've seen some behavior throughout the season, and you know, like I said, I've been doing this almost 10 years now, and I would say this year in particular, it was about as bad as I have ever seen it. And it's every game. It's not like I'm seeing this once a month, or I'm seeing this once a week. And it's insane. You know, we wonder why there's so many good coaches who are stepping down, why there's a shortage in referees, why so many. And you, I'm sure you talk to a lot of high school coaches as well. Man, there are not very many guys who are enjoying this right now.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest negative is always when you talk about what makes the job unenjoyable. I mean, the number one thing that's always cited almost every time is the parents. If you could take the parents out of the equation, I think high school coaches would be a lot happier. And I think college coaches have that a little bit better. I mean, there's still obviously some parent involvement. I'm guessing it's getting to be more and more involvement simply because of the amount of investment, both from a time and money standpoint, that people put into their kids' basketball career. But I think college coaches still have at least a little bit of a buffer. But man, high schools, it is right there.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I don't know. I've had my fair share of, you know, exchanges with parents and high school coaches, you know, throughout the years. It's funny. It's sometimes it's like people, they act like I'm the one giving the scholarships. You know, it's like, you know, if I'm not like the biggest fan of a kid, or if I don't like a kid that much, right? It's like, oh, it's sometimes people think it's like the end all be all. I'm like, man, all it takes is one school to like you.
Yeah.
You know, I've had disagreements with colleges that I work with. You know, they ask me, hey, what do you think about a kid? I say, hey, that kid sucks. Don't recruit him. They recruit him anyway. You know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, it's just like, parents are way too involved right now. And I think social media has led them to believe that their opinion matters. Quite frankly, it doesn't.
I think you make a great point about I always equate recruiting to selling your house, right? Like you can be selling your house and you can have 100 people come through it and all 100 of those people hate it. And all it takes is one. And eventually you're going to find that one that is going to buy. And I think recruiting can be the same way. Like you can have a lot of schools that maybe think that you're not the right fit, and you find one that thinks you are, and you get there and it is the right fit. And now suddenly somebody who maybe was lightly recruited or under recruited can be in the right place at the right time and have a great college career. And I think that's what we see with people a lot of times, is when they start comparing things on social media and they start putting stuff out there, and you look at and say, oh, this kid's got this offer, or this kid's going here or there, and everybody starts comparing. And once you start doing that, you start going down a slippery slope where you're taking away what we talked about before. You're taking away the fun because you're just trying to compare yourself to everybody else.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, me and a few guys, we have conversations kind of behind the scenes. And, you know, when a kid goes into the transfer portal, you know, most of the time we're not surprised, because we knew in high school that, you know, that the parent or the, you know, the mom, the dad was, you know, very unrealistic about the expectation. So it was like just a matter of time before that kid was to go in the portal. I think the one thing that people need to get through their heads is they look at their freshman year of college like they looked at their senior year of high school, right? Like when you're a senior in high school, if you're a legitimate college player, you know, you're either the guy on your team or you're one of the guys. But they also forget that when they were a freshman in high school, they weren't one of those guys. So why, when they go to college and they're a freshman in college, and they just expect that they should be playing 30 minutes a game as a freshman. I just don't understand it, because you didn't have those same expectations when you were a freshman in high school. So why do you have those same expectations now? It was a lot that when you just, you know, logically look at it, it just doesn't make a ton of sense.
How much do you think of that is just the fact that kids are, they're not just being recruited now at the college level, but when you think about the competition for players from an AAU standpoint, you have so many people telling kids from a young age how good they are. And it's really hard to find people that'll tell them the truth about their game and what they need to improve on, or really what level they are, because a lot of people have an interest in keeping that kid or that family happy. How much of that do you think plays into those unrealistic expectations?
I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. They do everything possible to keep that dream alive. So they won't be proactive. They won't, you know, see, hey, what level do you think I am, right? They won't ask legitimate people, whether it's their AAU coach or their high school coach. And if you do tell them what they don't want to hear, then they're going to transfer.
Right.
So a lot of the times high school coaches are afraid to be honest with kids or to hold them accountable, because, you know, if you can't afford to lose some of your better players, then sometimes you almost have, you feel like you have to tell them what they want to hear. That's why I'm thankful, you know, for what I'm able to do. I tell people this all the time, like, you're not always going to agree with me, but you're always going to know that I kept it real with you. Like, I'm never going to sugarcoat it. I'm never going to tell you what you want to hear. If you don't want to know my honest opinion, do not ask me any questions. I tell people that because I'm not going to make you any better by telling you what you want to hear. I'll never forget this. I had a kid come to one of my showcase events a few years ago. He played pretty well. After the showcase was over, I went up to his dad. And, you know, the dad and the kid were standing there. And I just said, hey, thanks for coming. I appreciate it. Here's three things that I want you to work on before I see you play again. And, you know, they shook their head. Yeah, you know, thank you. And then a couple months later, the dad called me and, you know, he said he had an issue that when I spoke to them, that the only thing I brought up was what he needs to do to get better. And it's like, that's the reality that we're in right now. You can't, constructive criticism is almost out of the window completely. And like I said, I know I'm not like some basketball mastermind, some end all be all, but it almost blows my mind sometimes just how few kids ever reach out to me and say, hey, what do you think about my game? What do you think I need to work on? And the kids that do that are the kids who typically turn out to be pretty successful. And the kids that I can tell, they're at least proactive, right, about, you know, improving themselves and improving their game.
To me, that makes a ton of sense, right? If you're a kid and you want to get better, and whether that's for your high school career or whether you want to play at the college level, you have to know a little bit about your own game, and you got to sometimes get an outside perspective. And then I think once you know what you're going to work on, then you got to go to your high school coach, or your AAU coach, or your trainer, or whoever it is that you're working with, and be like, okay, here's some things that I've got to work on. What can I do to make that happen? And there's a lot of kids that, again, don't necessarily want to do that. They don't want to hear those things that they've got to get better at. And I think it's interesting too that you talk about your ability to be able to tell the truth. And clearly, obviously, that leads to some situations where people aren't happy with you. But from your perspective, if you're going to be able to be respected and have people want to value your opinion, then you have to be truthful. If you're going around saying every kid is the greatest player there ever was, then what college coach is going to value your opinion? If everybody's great and everybody can play at any school they want to play at, then you're clearly not providing any value. So you have to be able to tell the truth. And again, that may not be what everybody wants to hear, but that's the way that you make a viable business. That's what makes you a quality scout, is the fact that you're willing to tell the truth.
I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, my credibility is everything in this business. If I know that a kid is a knucklehead and that he's immature and that he has issues off the court. When a college coach calls me about that particular kid and asks me, hey, like, well, what do you know about this kid? To be completely honest with you, man, it's tough for me. Because like I said, I want the best for these kids, right?
For sure.
You never want to just tear a kid down, but you also have to be honest with these coaches because they're paying you for the truth. They're not paying me to lie or to look out for the, you know, the kid's best interest. They're looking at me and they're paying me to keep it honest and to help them keep their job and to help them win games. So if a kid has issues or if, you know, the parents are, you know, a handful, or if he's had some bad experiences, or like, hey, he's played for 6 AAU teams in 4 years and 3 high school teams, then yeah, that's some of the information that, you know, I have to, you know, kick out to these college coaches, whether I want to do it or not, I do it.
What's the role in your mind for both a high school coach and an AAU coach when it comes to the recruitment of one of their players? What do you think is the key things that those particular coaches need to do in order to help facilitate their player being recruited?
Oh, that's a great question. I think what a lot of parents don't realize is, and it's not really their fault. A lot of the times it's because when they were in high school or when their dad was coaching or when their dad was in high school, the high school coach played a huge, huge part of a kid being recruited. Like college coaches would directly call the high school coaches and it was a very intimate process. Now, the majority of recruitment and evaluation takes place during the AAU season. You know, the high school coach, the vast majority of the time is just not as involved anymore. And I think, you know, you see a lot of parents who will transfer their kid to a different school because, oh, this coach doesn't do enough, you know, for my kid's recruitment. Well, what are you doing for your kid's recruitment, right? Did you play for the right AAU team? Were you on the floor for the AAU team? Did you play games? Did you go to the right tournaments? Were you in front of the right people? Like, were you proactive in the month of June? Did you go to elite camps? Did you go to team camps? Did you go to credible showcases? Right? There's so much that everybody can do now because there's just so many more opportunities out there than there used to be. So the high school coach, quite frankly, like his role in the recruiting process has taken like he's in the back seat a little bit. You know, a college coach will call a high school coach, you know, just to, you know, I guess, you know, kind of get some, you know, character, you know, what's he like, grades, you know, things like that. But quite frankly, I mean, they're watching these kids in AAU because during the high school season, they have their own seasons to worry about. They're trying to win games and win their conference and keep their jobs so that they can feed their families.
Yep.
You know, like I didn't see very many college coaches out on the road this year. Unless it was a showcase event like a flying to the hoop or, you know, one of the play-by-play classics, you know, that take place on like Sundays where you can get 5-6 games in one day, you know, you'll get some college coaches flying for that because it's a bang for their buck. They're usually off on Sundays, but the amount of college coaches who are in the gym on Tuesday nights and Friday nights, it's not what it used to be 10, 15 years ago. It's just not.
What about from an AAU perspective? What about AAU coaches? What's their role?
Oh, their role, I mean, is to obviously you want to construct the best team possible, right? You want to build relationships with coaches at all levels. You want to put kids in the right tournaments, in the right places. One thing I do every year is I collect AAU rosters and schedules from all the, you know, the notable teams across the state. And I look at some of these schedules and sometimes I just shake my head. I'm like, If you're an AAU team in Ohio and you have mostly Division II and Division III kids, why in the absolute hell are you playing in Florida? Or why are you going out to Arizona or to Vegas or to, you know, wherever? Like, if you have Division II, Division III, or even like low major, mid major guys, you have no reason to leave the Midwest. Indiana, Michigan, Kentucky, West Virginia, Illinois, PA, if I didn't say PA. That's it. there are about 5 to 6 states that you can go to tournaments in, and you will do your kids the best service. But yeah, it's tricky. There's a lot. There's a lot of moving pieces, and AAU coaches are doing a job that requires a lot of work, and they're not getting paid a ton of money. I think it's almost hilarious to see like just the banter sometimes between high school coaches and AAU coaches, right? There seems to be like this constant power struggle between the two, you know, high school coaches saying that, you know, guys go play AAU and develop bad habits and, you know, vice versa, whatever the case may be. But God, like these two, like they should be working together.
Yep.
And it's like, you think they'd be able to relate to each other, right? Because like, hey, neither one of us are making a ton of money doing this. We're both, you know, supposedly doing this for the kids. Like, I don't know. I think there's just a lot of pride and a lot of ego that gets in the way when it comes to high school basketball. And I think we all, including myself, you know, can do a better job of, you know, just kind of avoiding that.
I think ultimately what I always try to look at is, are you doing it what you do for the best interest of the kid? And I don't mean that that means that a high school kid should play, if they're the 11th man, that they should play 16 minutes a game because the high school coach is in it to do what's best for the kid. But I think ultimately, whether you're a high school coach or whether you're an AAU coach, what you want to do is you want to make sure that you're building relationships with those kids and you're putting them in the best position to be able to be successful that you can. And that means different things for different kids. But I think when you start to see agendas get in the way of what's best for the kid's development as a person, a player, I think that's where sometimes the adults and parents can be thrown in that mixes too, where when you're not doing it for the best interest of the kid, when you're doing it for the best interest of the adult or the group of adults or the business or whatever it might be, I think that's where we run into trouble sometimes.
Yeah. And if you watch closely enough, people usually tell on themselves, you know, just through their actions. A lot of the times you can see the people who are doing this for validation or the people who are doing this for attention versus the people who are doing this because they love it, right? They love people. They love the relationship aspect of it. It's very easy to tell, in my opinion, whose head and whose heart is in the right place.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, I think you can see the people who are doing it right and doing it for the right reasons and put together the right group of kids. I think ultimately that's where you end up with a situation that's positive for everybody all around, whether you're talking about the players, the coach, parents. And I found, at least in my experience, that like-minded parents and coaches eventually kind of find each other. And a lot of times you end up with teams where it all fits, and then you end up with other teams you're like, whoa, you know, what's going on there with that group of parents and that group of kids? And you know, I think coaches and scouts obviously can see those things when something comes together, whether it's on the high school level or the AAU level. Like, you know, when you're sitting in the stands, when you have a team that's together and plays for each other and plays the right way, like, you know which coaches and programs are doing it the right way.
Just you saying that, it makes me think of that Midwest basketball club team from 2 years ago. You know, with the Gabe Cups, Reed Shepherd, right. You know, Mike Schrab Jams, you know, Logan Woods, and, you know, all those guys that they had on that team. I remember when they were going from, you know, they were an Adidas team, you know, when they were making their rounds, you know, in April and July, there were college coaches. It was almost like uncharacteristic of them, but they were tweeting like, I just watched an AAU team. I think like Rick Pitino like tweeted, man, I just watched an AAU team put on an absolute clinic. And it's because like you said, that team played such a great brand of unselfish basketball. And it's so easy to see because it's so refreshing to watch it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no doubt about that. All right, let me ask you this. What's your favorite venue or two to watch a high school game in Ohio?
Oh, man. I think anybody who's been to the Canton Memorial Fieldhouse,
yep,
when that place is packed and that place is rocking, there's no better place in Ohio to watch a high school basketball game. I will take that with me to the grave. Another place that I think doesn't really get a ton of credit but is super slept on is the Struthers Fieldhouse. I think Struthers is an awesome venue. I'm trying to think of some other places I really like. I like Gilmore Academy. I know it's like really small, but like that's a beautiful gym. Have you been to many high schools in Southwest Ohio?
Not a ton.
So this is something that I've always thought was pretty interesting. So when you look at Northeast Ohio, we don't have very many like bigger gyms, right? You have, I guess, the field house in Canton. You have Euclid. Maple Heights is a pretty big size gym. You don't have very many gyms, like especially in the Cleveland area where they're just big and can hold a lot of people.
Yep.
When you go down to Southwest Ohio or Northwest Ohio, it is insane. Like almost the entire GMC, like Princeton, Lakota East, Lakota West, Hamilton, Middletown. If you look up just those gyms, they're like full blown arenas. Like the amount of people they hold. Like it's nuts. And I think that a lot of that is like the closer you get to Indiana, the more people care about basketball. I think largely, Northeast Ohio and Columbus, we probably have the most talent year in and year out, I would say on an average basis when it comes to high school basketball, but we're such, driven football cultures, that sometimes it gets overshadowed. But yeah, I think there are a lot of really good, cool places to watch high school basketball in Ohio, but it's just the crowds, man, just not, what they used to be.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
I think the last like really fun year in Northeast Ohio was probably 2018. I think that was like a really, really fun, exciting group of seniors. And I think they brought out a lot of just like more casual fans and a lot of students. But since 2018, obviously COVID plays a part in that. But they're just, there hasn't been too many really hyped up, big environments. It's kind of unfortunate, but I think that's just the direction that we're heading in right now.
Well, how do you feel about the sectionals being hosted by home teams versus everybody in one district sort of being put in one location like it used to be?
Oh, man, you don't want me to go on this rant. I promise you don't. I am so just like sick at the fact that there's no uniformity in Ohio. Nothing is the same. It's like Northeast Ohio does their own tournament. Central Ohio does their own tournament. Southwest Ohio starts like 2 weeks early, right? Southeast Ohio starts like a week later. Like we all, some host, some have all the tournament games on the neutral floor. Some areas, you get to host the first two rounds if you're the higher seed. It's nuts. It's like five different tournaments all going on at once, and then we all just happen to meet up at the end. It's ridiculous. Like there's no, like some areas do doubleheaders, some don't. Some do all their district finals in one gym. Some do all their district finals in five, six different places. It's nuts. I would love for someone, on that side of the table to just sit down and just make this make sense, because for someone who does this and deals with this on a daily basis, there are just so many things that just do not line up to me at all. And what you mentioned, that's one of them on a long list.
I just love the idea of putting everybody sort of in that same district location, just because it brings out more fans to see like the neutral games where your team's not involved, but it's a team that you might be playing against. Plus it just allows the teams themselves to come in and see a doubleheader or watch a couple games. And I feel like it misses some of that old tournament feel that we used to have in Northeast Ohio. What about state championship? Go ahead.
And I like the super districts from I think it's got its, I don't know. I think it's got its pros and its cons. I think like what you said, it definitely hurts the attendance, right? When you got two teams that are about 10 minutes apart, who are playing an hour and a half away.
Right.
Right. Like it's crazy to me. But what were you saying? What were you about to say in regards to the state tournament?
State tournament. What the best, what's the best venue? If you could pick any venue to put it in.
God, I don't know what venues there are right now, honestly, because, a lot of people mention, they want the tournament to go back to Columbus, but what people don't realize is, I've spoken with people from the OHSAA about this topic, and the OHSAA didn't want to leave Columbus. They had no choice. It's like when the landlord ups your rent to something that they know you can't afford, you have no choice but to move out, right?
Right. Yep.
And then you hear some people say, hey, they should move the games to St. John Arena, which, sounds like a really cool idea until you realize that St. John Arena is for the last like 4 years has been a weight room, and that it needs thousands of dollars in renovations before it could even host a high school basketball game, let alone a college game. Right. So St. John's is out of the picture. Nationwide Arena is probably too expensive. The Schottenstein Center is too expensive. We should be grateful and thankful that the University of Dayton is being a host for us.
Yep.
Because quite frankly, there's just not too many other places to go. So I don't think beggars can be choosers. I don't like the fact that I have to drive 3.5 hours to Dayton, versus 2 hours to Columbus. But I think from just a pure basketball standpoint, I think the environment at UD Arena is much better. It's smaller. I think the size of that arena makes sense for what the OHSAA tournament does and what it brings out. Yeah, I mean, that would probably be my thoughts on it. I don't really know where else it could go that would make sense from, not only a cost perspective, but from parking and a location. I would love to hear, some other alternatives in regards to where people think it could be or should be. But as of right now, I think UD Arena is going to be the long-term host for the tournament. I think it's going to be that way for quite some time.
Yeah, you got to get it right sized. I mean, I think the arena size is really important when you talk about making sure that you have the right atmosphere. Because I think the atmosphere, like you were talking about in terms of attendance and people coming out, I think that to me, high school sports, like part of what makes it super fun is just the atmosphere. And if you have a venue that's too big, then you're just kind of killing that atmosphere. So it's like you got to find that and strike that balance and find that happy medium where you have a venue that's going to be able to hold everybody who wants to get there, but at the same time, not be so cavernous that you lose that intimate feel of high school basketball.
Yeah, it's tough. A few of the complaints I've seen about UD Arena, for one, a lot of people don't like the Friday, Saturday, Sunday format, right? They want it to go back to Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But what they don't realize is that the UD Arena hosts, the first NCAA tournament games there on Tuesday and Wednesday. And I guess just from a logistics standpoint, they said they needed a day in between. So they didn't want to go Tuesday, Wednesday NCAA tournament and then go Thursday, Friday, Saturday right into the OHSAA tournament. I guess they wanted a day off in between those two. So that's why we see the OHSAA tournament being Friday, Saturday, Sunday now, is because of the NCAA tournament. But I would say the one, not only like just the fact that you got games at, Sunday night at 8:30, that's always going to, take away from the attendance. But I just think the fact that when you look at UD Arena, as beautiful as it is, it's on an island almost. It's away from everything. There's not really a ton around it and within walking distance, where when we used to be at the Schottenstein Center, you could park your car and you wouldn't need your car for the rest of the day.
Right.
You would go to a game, then you would leave the game. You would go to the varsity club. You would go drink some beers, eat a burger, right? Go tailgate, and then it's time for you to go watch the second game of the day. And you would just do that all night, and then you would go back to your car at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. Well, at UD Arena, you have to drive to the arena, go watch the game, come back to your car, leave from the arena, find wherever you're about to go, and then come back to the arena for the next game. So I think that kind of hurts, you know, the fan experience a bit. But yeah, I would say that's an interesting conversation. But yeah, that would be my overall thoughts on it.
Absolutely. All right. We're coming up towards an hour and a half. I want to ask you final two-part question.
Part one,
when you look ahead with your business, with everything that you're doing, what do you see as being your biggest challenge, your most exciting challenge over the next year or two? And then the second part, when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy about being the owner of NEO Spotlight and what you get to do? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Man, that's a great question. Sometimes I would say my biggest challenge, I'm so busy. Sometimes I feel like I spread myself too far thin. And I'm trying to balance a few different ideas and a few different things all at once that I don't really get to look too far ahead. And I feel like I'm almost going on like a day-to-day basis.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. So that's something I definitely want to really improve on. I think I'm an organized person, but just because I have so much on my plate, I can't really look too far down the road. But I would say the ultimate goal with what I do is, I think if the right opportunity presented itself in terms of college coaching, that's something that I would really, really have to, you know, look at. But I would say my ultimate goal would be to work in the NBA in some capacity. So just kind of figuring out, you know, how to get to that point. But quite frankly, man, regardless of what happens, I am very blessed and fortunate to be able to do what I do. Like, I get paid to go watch basketball, man. Like, dude, like if I told the 9-year-old me that right now, like that dude would be doing cartwheels down the street. Like that kid would be the happiest kid in the world if I said, hey, man, in 21 years, 22 years, you're going to be getting paid to go watch high school games. Something that you're paying $8 a night to go do right now. That kid would be, you know, ecstatic. So yeah, I'm very, you know, just happy and blessed. I would say the one thing that brings me the most joy is just watching strangers turn into friends. You know, that college coach that reaches out to you and asks you about a kid, you know, one time, right? Introduces himself. Hey, what do you think about this kid? And that turns into, hey, bro, what are you doing on Friday? I'm going to be in your area. You want to go grab some drinks and go grab some food? Or, you know, just the different scouts and media people that you meet along the way, the parents that turn into friends, just watching the kids develop, watching the kids kind of come into their own. You get to watch kids when they're a freshman. And then by the time they're a senior, it's just like, man, that kid's come a really long way. So it's awesome, man. Just from a people standpoint, this is something that I've been wanting to do my entire life. And thankfully I'm in a position where I'm able to do it. And I try to never take that for granted.
That's good stuff, man. Really good stuff. And I'm excited to be able to have the opportunity to talk to you, learn more about what you do, but share how people can get in contact with you. Social media, website, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at @NEO_spotlight. The website is neohiospotlight.com. And my email address is simply just tjpetros@neohiospotlight.com. Feel free, if you're a parent, if you're a kid, high school coach, if you have any questions, you know, in regards to the, you know, the high school, you know, recruiting process, what camps you should go to, what AU tournaments you should go to, anything that's on your mind, I'd be happy to help you in whatever way that I can.
TJ, we cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on and join us. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.